Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I am your host, Shane Bacon, and we've got a good one this week. Brett Quigley won earlier this year on the Champions Tour. He actually stopped by in person. Socially distanced, of course, but he stopped by in person as the Champions Tour this week is concluding their season at Phoenix Country Club, where I play my golf here in the Arizona area. So Quigs came over and we chatted about his time working alongside the Fox crew and myself, you know, during his run there, and then this winning the second event that he played in on PGA Tour Champions, and now feeling, you know, like he's a part of the mix, as he is. And I talked about this on the podcast with Quigley, but I played a lot of golf with Brett over the last two and a half years, considering we were on the road a lot together. And I feel like myself, Mark Loomis, Faxon, Julie Inkster, on down the list, people that got a chance to play with him, we were all amazed and floored at how good he was and how effortless it looked. So it's no surprise to us the year he's having on the PGA Tour Champions. But it's fun to see. It's fun to see good people, good things happening to good people. So hope you enjoy it. Here we go with Brett Quigley. And we welcome into the clubhouse for the first time and in person, about, you know, 8 feet away from each other. I think that's okay. That's about the number. Brett Quigley, what's up, Quigs?
Not much. I'm glad we don't have a tape measure, but I'm guessing 8 or 9 feet. So that's good. And in person is really fantastic.
Way better for interview. I did an interview today earlier that'll come out in a couple of weeks. That was a great interview. But just getting a chance to do in-person versus phone, especially with somebody you know, is a nice thing. Of course, Brett Quigley has had a great run on the Champions Tour. You turned 50 August 18th of 19, right?
Correct.
And you won your second Champions Tour event.
Yes, I did.
That was in Morocco. And I was reading a little bit about just some of your quotes after, and you said you didn't. You were like, I didn't really get nervous until the last putt. You had what, probably 6, 7, 8 feet for par?
I did. I had yes is the short answer. I ran about a 30 footer 6 feet by, and I was like, oh my gosh, here we go. I need to make this because I don't want to go into the playoff and somehow made it dead center.
So, you know, we worked together for a number of years at Fox, and it was always you, me, Fax, and our producer, Mark Loomis, were kind of the four that would sneak away and go play golf. And, you know, you were in your late 40s, and I'd kind of gone through the same thing with Flesh. You know, Flesh was a part of the broadcast crew when he was like 48, 49. McCarron did the same thing. And both players obviously, you know, go to the Champions Tour and they're full-time players and are having a ton of success. You are a guy that battled injury during your PGA Tour career. You know, I think your last win before the Champions Tour event was at 01. Is that what it was?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, like
I want to remember guest along the way there.
You want some events. But, you know, I mean, I feel like those were two guys. You know, Flesh had the pedigree on the PGA Tour. McCarron was a good player that people, I think, felt like was in physical shape to do well when he turned 50 and went to the Champions Tour. You were a guy that we were around, and Lumi and I were like, this dude's going to kill it when he gets out there, as long as he's healthy and he kind of believes in himself. How did you find success so fast, considering that you'd had a break from kind of the competitive world? You were out there, you know, you were leaning on money as a way to get into these events, you know, kind of your money list during your PGA Tour time. How did you find success so fast?
I think it's a combination of things. I was really working towards getting to 50 years old. I mean, the last 5 years I was working on my game, working on every aspect of the game. You mentioned Lumi and Fax and playing a lot of golf with you too. And that the work for Fox and the USGA also, I think, helped me mentally to see, hey, guys that are winning championships or big tournaments aren't always playing perfect golf. And I think in my PGA Tour career, certainly if I'm going to say I was disappointed with it, I always thought it had to be better than it was. I thought there had to be perfection in there for guys that win each week. And that's not the case at all. And I think that helped me realize that too. And then getting in the Morocco tournament, literally 3 weeks before the tournament, I didn't know I was going to be in the tournament. I get in kind of last minute, and I just viewed it as a free week. I said, okay, let's go over, see if I can finish top 10, somehow got in the last group after two rounds and then played great golf.
Yeah, I mean, you shot six under the final round, I think, and it was kind of a battle with Ames, and obviously you win. But it's what I find cool. You know, I had Sophia Popoff on the clubhouse after she won the Women's British Open. You know, a crazy good story. Really the kind of story that makes golf so great. I mean, I literally just got goosebumps thinking about it. I mean, these are the stories that we love to see, and I feel like only happen in golf. But you're not a guy. It's like you haven't just won. I mean, this is your 2020, 13 events. A win, a second, a third, four top 10s, and six top 25s. You know, you're kind of making Lumi and I look really smart.
I'm here for you guys.
I know you are. I know, and I appreciate it. But I mean, you know, it's been, I don't want to say it's been relatively easy, but your skills and the work you put in sure have seemed to work out, you know, over the last, you know, 12 months or so.
It's funny you say not easy, because so I obviously win Morocco, come out, play well in the next couple of weeks. Then we shut down for COVID and then come right back and have a chance to win our first event. And Furyk beats me on the last hole there. And for me to play, maybe backtrack a little, for me to play well, I need to not goof around, not that it's I don't care because you obviously care. But if when I take it too seriously, I don't perform well. It just put unnecessary pressure on myself instead of just playing golf. And then after I finished second to Furyk, I'm leading the money list. And everyone's like, oh my gosh, you need to do this or you need to do that or you need to reset your goals. And then for me to start thinking about results instead of thinking about my process and just having fun and going through the stuff that I know that I need to do in order to perform well, I kind of got out of that routine. And in the last couple of weeks, I've gotten back into just doing what I need to do to play well.
Has it been weird? Has it been weird for you going from, you know, 2019 and you're doing, you know, these random USGA events with us and you're doing the US Open and you're doing these US Juniors and you're popping around to these small cities. And now, I mean, you're getting media requests and you're having new press conferences and you're a marquee player on the banners when you drive into these golf courses. I mean, has that been strange this year?
It is a little surreal. You can hear my smile there. Yes, because 2 years ago, last year, we were doing events in the middle of nowhere for the USGA.
Stevens Point, Wisconsin.
I mean, and having fun, right? And I certainly enjoyed my time doing that and enjoyed being with you guys because it was a fun crew and we always had fun doing it. And now all of a sudden, to be, you know, I mean, the guys that have come out this year, whether it's Mickelson, Els, Furyk, and then to be included in that group is really cool. I mean, and it's a great experience. I'm not going to say I'm happy that I'm there. I'm okay that I'm there. I don't know if that makes sense. I'm
you're
okay.
Comfortable
in that.
Yes, being there.
Comfortable is the right word.
Yeah.
For sure.
It feels like, well, again, I mean, I was never sure. And I'm guessing the answer is yes, but I was never sure if you saw what we saw in your own game, because you know, I mean, Quiggs, when I'd play with you, I mean, you know, we know Brad Faxon's short game. Trust me, we hear about it about every angle possible in golf. But you're one of the best putters I've ever played golf with, and you're pitching around the greens. You know, Faxon would openly say, I mean, this is just about as good a putter as I've ever played with. And I mean, that coming from, you know, kind of the guy that is the legend with the flat stick. I mean, this, you grew up with Brad. I mean, this was a guy that you grew up with. I mean, can you tell the story of you guys and just how your lives have just kind of intertangled throughout the years?
Our lives have, I mean, he's like a big brother to me. My dad caddied for Brad. Brad caddied for my dad growing up. I grew up caddying for Brad. My dad, my uncle Dana, Faxon, myself, all went to the same high school golf coach. So we have a lot of history together. So, and I grew up around Billy Andre too, who was also one of the best putters,
right,
chippers and putters of all time. And so it wasn't a big deal. It was like, hey, those guys are doing it. I can do it.
I can knock
and
this 5-footer.
Yeah, I grew up watching those guys doing it, and it wasn't a big deal to get up and down from a place you wouldn't think normally you can do that. But maybe back to your point, I think, I've always heard it from my uncle Dan and my dad that I've got the ability to do it, and I'm not sure I always deep down believed it. And now I think I know that I can do it, and I'm kind of behaving like that, if that's the right way to say it. Not in a cocky way, but like, hey, okay, my good is good enough where If I play well, I've got a chance to be near the top at the end.
Yeah, like you go, I mean, this week you're playing Phoenix Country Club where I play golf. Unfortunately, I'm not going to play golf this week. I've never been a part on the club side of an event coming your way. And of course, no grandstands, you know, I mean, limited fans or whatever they're doing at Phoenix this year. But the golf course closes for like a month and a half, you know. I mean, it's overseas season, rolls right into the Schwab. My game is on the decline and your game's going up. But you said you never, I mean, you never played Phoenix, but you played it today. Was it the first time you played it?
Yes.
And we're recording this on Wednesday. You get a chance to play it. You get done with the round. Now it's like, yeah, I can win here. Is that where your head goes? I mean, is that the stuff you think now that is maybe different than the way you maybe have thought in the past?
Yeah, it's for, again, not to get caught up in, for me, results. I think that this is a good golf course, and it brings in a lot of different players. Guys that bomb it, guys that hit it short. The greens are perfect.
They're so good.
Absolutely perfect. They're fast, and I love that. Challenging golf with good fast greens. So it's going to be a fun week. You never know when you tee up what's going to happen and what game you're going to bring, but certainly I feel good. I had a nice week last week and trending in the right direction.
How has the Phil Mickelson experience been for you guys? You know, the players, how has that been so far? Playing two events, wins both. Obviously headlines are following him around, you know, the storylines, everything. The focus is it's Phil. And then everybody else, most of the time, when Phil does anything, for goodness sake. So, I mean, I'm just wondering what it's been like for a player on the Champions Tour.
I love it. I love watching him. I mean, honestly, most of the players are watching him when he's hitting on the range. He's still hitting it 50 by everybody. And it's just amazing to see him swing that hard and hit it that hard. He's also hitting it everywhere, which is fun to watch, too. I mean, I love that aspect of the game. And he's brought new life into the PGA Tour champions. He's as has Furyk and Ernie, and you see those guys playing well. I think that's great for our brand and our product and the competition.
I had Phil on the clubhouse a couple weeks ago, and he said something very interesting that I never really thought of with the Champions Tour. He said that's different than the PGA Tour. Is he said if you like pinnable spots, so on the PGA Tour it might be three off back left, and he said Champions Tour is going to be six off the back left. You know, it's not as tough, it's not as penal, and it's not as testing maybe as some of the PGA Tour golf courses are. And I think that's to your point about him not really hitting a lot of fairways. He can get away with that on these types of golf courses.
Absolutely. And he's playing, I mean, he's free, right?
Right.
I mean, he's swinging free, and he's like, hey, I'm using this as a warm up, and whether that helps his mental state to say, hey, you know what, this doesn't matter. And then he goes and makes a million birdies and doesn't care about it. But it's you hate to use the expression, fun to watch. I love it. I love the energy out there. There's certainly a lot more, even with COVID, there's a lot more buzz when Phil's around.
I was going to say, I mean, I would love to have seen this situation with fans just to see what it looked like for you guys and what it felt like for you guys when Phil showed up, right? I mean, because you would have seen it with the fans. I mean, you would have had this swarm of fans following Phil and Phil's group around because the guy still draws. I mean, we see it, you know, with these matches they're doing, and now we're seeing it out there. But, you know, I'll be honest. I mean, the PGA Tour event that went against Phil's last win, I believe it was his second win. I mean, I had Champions Tour on the big TV. You know, I was excited to watch what he would do because, first of all, he's pitching a perfect game. And second, it's Phil competing against what I consider a very underrated tour, you know, a lot of talent on the PGA Tour champions. And I don't always feel like it gets maybe the credit it deserves.
I agree. And just to watch, he actually had some decent, I think in Richmond when he won, we had the members of the club come out, but so he still had some people around. But
yep.
To your point, it's fascinating, you know, and it's fun to watch him play golf and doesn't matter what tour he's playing. And I love the energy that he's bringing to our tour.
What is it like being on this tour, maybe versus what you thought it might be like? Because we hear so much about champions versus the PGA Tour.
It's just a different vibe. It's not, I'm going to say a happier vibe. It's competitive as all heck, but most everybody has done their thing. And now they're like, okay, this is fun. We're trying really hard and we want to win. But they're a little more relaxed about it as far as the grind of the PGA Tour.
When you look at the PGA Tour right now, distance is king. You know, Bryson is changing it, and we're seeing guys that are the entire social media world of golf is just posting TrackMan pictures. I guess that's the new thing. But what do you feel like after a year in this? What do you feel like is, besides working for Fox, apparently, what is a huge, what is necessary to be competitive on the PGA Tour champions?
Well, I mean, every week you have to make putts. I mean, you look at the scores, it doesn't matter how you play. You have to shoot 4, 5, 6 under almost every round to have a chance to win. Distance helps.
Okay.
Certainly.
I mean, that's with McCarron. I mean, I feel like McCarron is, when I played with McCarron in Detroit, I believe it was right before he turned 50, and he hit it forever. And I continue to go back to this. Like, you're a guy that's in good shape and you're having success out there. I feel like the healthy guys that have kept themselves in shape tend to be the ones that are competitive for 5 years out there.
It seems that way right now. And certainly Scotty hits it a mile. Ernie Els hits it a mile. Retief still hits it a mile. Vijay hits it long. Freddie still hits it really long. Obviously, Phil goes without saying. But so the guys that are doing well, it seems they tend to be a little bit on the longer side. But the fun thing about this week at Phoenix Country Club, you don't have to be a long hitter
right.
to be in contention. Certainly Maggart winning last year, beating Retief in a playoff. So that's kind of the flip side of the same coin there, which makes this event for me a fun week, and it should bring everybody in the fold.
It's an old school golf course. I mean, that is what drew me to Phoenix Country Club when I was looking at places to join. It is what I think it intrigues people that show up. You know, you think about Arizona Golf and you think about Desert Mountain and, you know, Wecopah and True North and all those places where you miss the ball and you're in there with the lizards. And all of a sudden you show up at this golf course that had, you know, 30 something Phoenix Opens or whatever. And it's this old school tree line golf course. You're like, oh, wow, it's kind of a throwback. I feel like the Champions Tour guys have really liked the change. I feel like they like the move back to, you know, a golf course that they may have maybe played in, you know, past Phoenix Opens, and also a golf course that maybe feels a little bit like courses you'd grow up on.
Yeah, and it's a fun place. You're walking out one fairway, and then the next fairway, the hole's coming back, and, you know, it's a tight, landlocked golf course, but that's a great thing about it. And it is old school with some big trees, tree-lined fairways, great par threes. So it's a fun week.
You talked about Dana. I read a quote you had after your win. You said he's the best ball striker you've seen. Is that still correct?
It is. I wouldn't say that today at 73, but but growing up, he was
just
he
never this, missed middle of face.
No, straight. And if he putted poorly, he'd shoot 69. If he putted well, he'd shoot 63. I mean, and it was every single day. And I certainly learned so much from him growing up, caddying for my dad. Being around that and just, Dana would always say, you got to play your way into playing well. Don't sit there on the range and hit balls, because you're not learning how to play golf on the range. You learn how to play golf on the golf course and just play golf.
So your philosophy now, same. I mean, you'll hit balls at times, but you will learn more about who you are on a golf course.
I'll say yes, I do. Certainly I do better when I play more. It's easy, it's sexy to sit on the range and hit balls, whether it's with a TrackMan
right.
or video or whatever it is, and whether you want to look at numbers, I find myself falling into that trap. Even when I'm at home, if I have an hour to practice, you know, whether before I pick up the girls for after school, whatever the timing is, instead of just running around playing five holes, I'll be like, oh, let's go hit some balls. Or instead of spending the majority of the time on the chipping green or the putting green where it matters the most, I have to watch myself now to make sure I play more than I normally would.
You know, I've adopted this during COVID, just because, you know, golf courses are still open and we're still able to go play golf basically throughout this whole thing, especially in Arizona. I was always the guy that I felt like I needed to be at the driving range. Like, I felt like I should be at the driving range. I mean, you hear the whole thing, if you're not practicing, somebody else and he'll beat you if you guys meet or whatever. All those old quotes. Henry is 16 months now and he loves the golf course. He likes being out there because he can run around and he can play in a bunker and whatever. It's been so good for me to go out and do that. You know, just to go out for 90 minutes on the golf course and play 3 or 4 holes and hit a couple of shots. And, you know, I'll take 5 clubs and I'll change the 5 clubs out. So I have, some days I don't have a driver and I have the 3 woods. Some days I don't have any woods at all. And, you know, you have one wedge, so you've got to hit that wedge no matter what the wedge shot calls for. It's crazy how different it feels when you're hitting shots into actual greens, to actual flags, hitting actual shots that you hit when you have to play a golf round. You know, I mean, that's just so different than being on the range and 20 minutes might pass. You go, I don't even know what I just did for 20 minutes.
Absolutely. And when you're out there on the golf course, you have to hit shots that matter. You
know, right.
And I love that because that engages your mind creatively and forces you to be like, okay, this is what I need to think about in order to hit this wedge that I normally hit 150, but I got to hit it 110 or whatever the situation is. And talk about bringing Henry out. That's fantastic for you to spend time with him and keep bringing him out, because that's how I grew up around the golf course, grew up around my dad playing golf and just being around it. And that's going to be stuff that you're going to really cherish and certainly help him grow his interest.
I carry one of his little plastic Fisher Price clubs that are over there in the corner. And and the first couple of times really into the club, and recently just kind of thrown it to the side. I'm like, that's fine. Whatever you want to do. You want to go look at the turtles? We'll go look at the turtles. That's fine. Whatever your fun is at the golf course is your fun. And that's what we're going to do. I was reading something. I mean, I don't, are you an emotional guy?
I tend to be sometimes, probably too much.
Okay. So I hadn't seen this, I didn't hear you say this after your victory, but you were talking about, somebody asked you what the coolest text you got, you know, what was your favorite text? What was the text that you received after your win? And you said it was from your 11-year-old. Which I, as a new dad, I totally get that. Cause I mean, I can only imagine how cool that is, but I did get a little like Tiger vibes from you where you play golf, you're a golfer, but your kids maybe didn't get to see you when you were in your prime. They didn't get to see you when you're out there battling, you know, with the superstars or whatever. And you getting a win now, you said your 11-year-old told you it was, oh, this is really cool, dad.
Yeah. You're like, you're on TV. You're like, she couldn't even believe it. And it's funny, now she's 12, but even two nights ago, she goes, Dad, I saw some commercial. Is that you on the TV? You know, it's for the Champions Tour. I'm like, yes, that's me. She just couldn't believe it. You know, so to your point, I've always tried to keep it separate as far as like not taking the round and the day-to-day stuff, either home or after you get off the golf course, because that can totally wear you out. But, you know, so try to compartmentalize all that stuff is what you have to do to kind of stay sane out here.
I bet. And I mean, your life has gone through a lot of different iterations lately. You know, I mean, that's, you know, it's, I mean, living in places, working in different places, doing completely different jobs. I mean, I feel like your journey into this position now has been so different than everybody else out there. I mean, you know, Tanigawa, guys like that, where you could throw in maybe something similar, but for the most part, you being in the commercial, you know, you're in a commercial with a guy that never stopped playing golf for 50 years, never stopped playing golf for 50 years, never stopped playing golf for 50 years. And you are the face on there, you know, 10th in the Schwab, got a chance to win the Charles Schwab Cup. It's like, I am, you know, I'm one of these guys now. And my journey was just so different.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point on being with Langer and seeing all those guys, it is a little surreal to see that. But yeah, my journey, I mean, it's funny. I've been through so much stuff with leg injuries, a broken leg, a broken back, not playing for a long time, not knowing if I'd even get starts on the PGA Tour
right.
Champions. You know, and it never, I'm not going to say it never bothered me, but I was like, okay, this is what I'm doing now. This is what I'm going to do. And then just keep going, going and going, and not ever, like a woe is me or anything. And it's just like, hey, this is fun. And again, to the point, I enjoyed the time working with Fox and you
right.
guys and that's what I wanted to do. And like, and it's almost like wherever I am, that's where I need to be, or that's the greatest place to be right now.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back. What I found funny about always watching you and Brad and all the other players that are out doing TV is you guys are basically approaching golf courses like you're playing it. You know, like, your approach to a broadcast, you and Brad specifically, your approach to a broadcast is as if you were playing that golf course that week, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's yardage books, it's putting, it's hole locations. I mean, Castrolli was the same way. She'd go out there and grind over it. Julie'd go out as well. I mean, not to name, you know, I mean, Zinger, if you kind of keep going on and on the list of the people we had on our team. But I was always so impressed with kind of the level of commitment that went into what you were doing, you know, that week. You know, you're on course. I've been on course before. You know, there's times where you get kind of lost or your group's not playing great and you're not really in much. But I just always was so impressed with y'all's approach. It's almost like you have one, you have like one speed on a golf course.
Absolutely. Yeah. And when we get out there, in order to get to where we are, we've had to be committed. Right. And I've always, whatever I'm doing, I want to try to be really good at it. Like I want it to be meaningful, and I don't want to half-ass.
You can say half-ass.
Sorry. I got a little stammering.
No, I understand. Yeah. I knew where you're going with it.
But, and to your point on the, like the greens and doing the homework, and I wanted to be prepared. And I, the tough part for me in the beginning was they hand you the microphone and have at it. You know, I get done with the first couple events, and I remember calling Lumi. I'm like, hey, do you guys ever like send clips to like media coaches or anything like that? He's like, no. I said, well, I know I'm the best that's ever done this, Lumi, but I want to get better, you know, and he laughed.
How do I improve?
Yeah. That's right. So it's that certainly was intimidating for me. And I liked what I was doing, at least on the ground, because I could call golf.
Right.
I could call the shots and kind of call what the guys are seeing or the girls or whatever were about to do or what the situation presented. And I didn't have to not criticize, but certainly what you do and what Fax does in the booth is a little more of a challenge for me as far as calling out the players.
What has been the part of your game that you felt like you've had to improve since starting on the Champions?
When I drive it well, I score well.
Okay.
And so for me that, and I've struggled a little bit in the last 2 months, and I feel like I got a handle on it this past week, but my putting this, and again, when I play fast greens, it feels like everything slows down for me. So even my stroke has a different cadence, and I love that because I'm not in any kind of hurry. And as we get nervous or close to lead or whatever it is, your anxiety, for me, I tend to run quick. And I know if I can slow down just a half a second, just that little beat, that makes all the difference in the world.
Is the Brysoning of golf going to sneak into the Champions, or has it already? I mean, is this something we're going to see where, you know, distance is going to take over there as well?
I think so. The guy that I'm impressed the most with is every day is Retief. I mean, he hits driver everywhere and he kills it. Tom Pernice, I don't follow him on Twitter or Instagram. The guys are saying he's got swing speed over 120 or 122 now at 61, wow, which is incredible. So I am definitely going to work on seeing if I can. And it's funny, I don't even know what my swing speed is, but I guess I'm going to have to
try. You hit it pretty far though.
I do for my size, the economy. Of the size that I am. But I mean, there are a lot of guys that they're doing well that hit it long. Scott Parel hits it long for a little guy. So it's definitely important. And it's, if you can get to par fives and two, that makes a big difference. Wedges into the greens on par fours, that makes a huge difference. So I'm gonna tinker around with it a little bit in the off season. It's hard not to. Again, the driving range thing, as long as I don't spend too much time on the driving range, I know that works extremely well for Bryson. It doesn't even sound like he plays golf
does
at all.
I feel like he now does it in like a theater. I don't even think he hits dry. I think it's like he's built. I was laughing. I think my buddy Brendan Porath, when he was posting videos of when he was swinging, you know, hitting it 400, he said, this is just like when Hogan prepared for the Masters. You know, it's a little different for the traditionalist in the world, and it's not for everybody. But obviously, you know, we've seen success. It's going to be very interesting. I think everybody's excited to see him at Augusta just to see what it looks like and to see if it works, because you've got to be on too, right? I mean, that's the key to this, is you can swing it as hard as you want. We see the long drive guys do it. But if you're a little off, you're going to have a bad week.
Right. And it's exponential on the when the club face is off a little, whether it's path or face open or close. But the other thing that Bryson did unbelievable that week is he chipped and putted it incredible. His putting was incredible.
Yeah, super underrated. I mean, it's like, we love to look at certain parts of people, and especially in golf, and you totally forget to look at other stuff. I feel like this with Rory, when Rory was struggling, was Rory would struggle and finish top 10, and everybody would always talk about his wedge game. And it's like, the guy's finishing top 10. I mean, everything's working pretty well. Are there parts of it we wish were a little sharper? Absolutely. But you can't just look at one thing, especially in golf. It's hard to look at one aspect of the game and, you know, really try to put the magnifying glass on it and forget about everything else. Because if guys are competitive and they don't win, they're playing pretty good.
Absolutely. And you can't win every week.
Right.
And guys,
unless you're Phil. Yeah.
He's two for two, so he's done all right. But yeah, I mean, to your point on Rory, I mean, I think that he's unfairly scrutinized because the expectations are so high on him that he drives it incredibly. He drives it farther than Bryson most of the time. I think he averaged more distance or during the U.S. Open than Bryson did. So he has that. And then there's the expectation that, hey, he's got to win every week. And if he doesn't hit his wedge close, or even if he hits his wedge close, then he misses the putt, then he's putting poorly.
Right.
Like, it's almost a no-win situation where he shouldn't look at any social media. He shouldn't look at any of that stuff. And he just, and play golf. But he loves that. He loves posting that stuff. And he loves being in the fray of all that. And I'm not sure that's helping him play his best golf right now.
You know, Rory gets... At times, I feel like he gets criticized because it looks so good. You know, it's like the swing is so beautiful that it's kind of, we almost wonder as golfers, why don't you win more? And we look past the fact that nobody besides Tiger really wins a whole bunch, especially on the PGA Tour. Was there anybody with you growing up or anybody early in your pro career who you felt like got scrutinized a bit because it looked so easy and it maybe didn't produce the results that the media or the golf world wanted?
You know, maybe Ernie. You know, Ernie, okay. I mean, obviously had a great career. I mean, I'm not going to say he's an underachiever, but a guy that swings like that, it looks pretty easy. Same thing with Freddie, but Freddie battled a bunch of, you know, back injuries or injury throughout his career. I can't think of anybody else.
I feel like, you know, when you kind of look back historically, you know, we love to kind of dissect Weisskopf's career, you know, because he hit it forever and he had a great swing and he was a big dude and he was the next Jack and, you know, it didn't quite work out the way we all wanted it. And you know, we can't curb expectations. We can't curb hope, right, as fans, but you sometimes want to, you know, you're just like, the guy had a good career. You know, I laugh all the time when I see these people ripping Spieth apart. Like, the guy's won three majors. He's won three different majors already in his career. If he goes through a slump, the career is already there.
Absolutely. And to your point, Justin Thomas, I mean, there's so much talent on the PGA Tour now, whether you want to look at Brooks, Dustin, Justin Thomas, any of those guys are so incredibly talented and they have a chance to win every week. And if they don't win every week, everyone's like, oh, what's wrong? You know, how can they not win?
Right. They've how got, does Brian Gay win? You know, people are confused. They forget that it's a lot more than hitting it and making it look good.
Yeah. And it's 4 days of golf.
Right.
And get it in the hole. And you never know what you're bringing to the golf course that day and what the other person, what's going to happen. Darren Clark wins last week on our tour. He, second hole of the day, the second round, he picks up his ball in the middle of the fairway. We weren't playing it. We played lift clean in place the first round.
Right.
He picks up his ball and he's like, oh no. So then he puts it back in the same spot, knocks it over the green in the mud. I was just talking to his caddy this morning, Sandy Armour, Tommy Armour's brother. And he's got no shot. He's short-sighted himself. He's got a big ridge to go up and he's got mud on the ball. It's not a good lie. Normally hits a sandwich. He takes a 7-iron, ties a bump and run it up the hill. Bumper runs up the hill, goes in for a par with the penalty, and then goes on to shoot 10 under, goes on to win. You know, so there's so many minuscule things that either add up or continue a momentum or make or break around. If he makes bogey or double there, he does not win the golf tournament.
Right.
He chips in with a 7-iron because there's mud on the ball and he goes on to shoot 10 under and wins the golf tournament.
13th on the champions driving distance, by the way, for you.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. I'm sure that's accurate, but I've hit a lot of trees in the last couple of months.
Well, I don't think, maybe they don't take those into account. I'm just saying 13th, pretty good. Before you go, give us a Faxon story from back in the day. You and Faxon story, Brad story, growing up. Give us something that includes our boy Brad Faxon that we can maybe laugh at him about.
Well, I'll give you a good one from last week. So last week they mic'd, I played with Scott McCarron and Lee Jansen. They mic'd our group. And I'm like, you know what? I don't want to do this. It's going to affect my swing. But after doing TV, I'm like, you know what? Let's just do this because who cares? It's just a round of golf. It could be fun. Who knows if they'll show us or if we get anything good. So anyway, I'm playing okay and I hit a bad drive on one hole. I hit it right. It's a tough tee shot. And I kind of a shot the green, but then I decide not to because there's water all around it. So I chip it out over the trees, back into the fairway. I knock a sandwich on the green, make a 15-footer for par. And Lee Jansen chimes in, Jesus, that's just like Faxon hits it, makes a par. I said, hey, we call those Faxon pars at home. So I don't think anything of it. I finished the round. I'm driving home. Faxon calls me and he goes, what are you doing? Why are you throwing me under the bus? I said, what are you talking about? He said, I've gotten 6 texts. I've had 10 calls, people saying you're making fun of me on the golf course. I said, I'm not making fun of you. I said, that's a compliment to make a Faxon par. I love that, to hit it everywhere. I love getting That was always fun for me to get people in your group, not upset, but just shaking their head that you're making pars from here or making birdie from here, to hit it all over the golf course and just continue to play golf is fun. And I that's probably what I've learned most from Brad. I mean, you don't have to play perfect golf and you can still make a bunch of birdies and have a chance.
Yeah. I mean, Brad, not, you know, historically not the straightest to drive into the golf ball. I think he would even admit that, but he's a guy that got it in the hole. I mean, he won 8 times on the PGA Tour. You know, he's not some slouch. It just, well, again, goes back to what we talked about with Rory. You know, he was unbelievable at one aspect of it. He was probably below average at another, but when it was not working out, he would just lean on the part that he was really good at. And I mean, that's what we've seen with Rory. I asked Brad, by the way, told him I was going to do this with you. I said, give me some insight. Here's what he told me. Likes Porsches, likes Rolexes. And then he wrote, likes to wake up early, coffee, tequila, wine. This is the information I get from my old booth mate. Need an update on that. By the way, what are we talking about? Early wake up calls.
I wake up early all the time. Like, I mean, I'm especially out here. If now that I'm a 2-hour time change, I'm up at 4. So I'm normally up at 5:30 at home on the East Coast.
Okay.
I like getting up early. It's just who I've always been. I'm not a night owl. Like, I could go to bed. I have 2 girls, 12 and 13, Lily and Lucy, and literally Amy and I are drawing straws each night. Who's going to put Lily to bed, because we're both trying to go to bed about 9:30. But yeah, so I like getting up early. I like seeing the sunrise. I like that quiet time in the morning.
When is, so if you have a late time, so like, let's say this week you play well, it's Sunday, you've got the last tee time out. Is that tough for you?
A little bit, as far as not the nervousness or anxiety, but like I'll have the coffee, breakfast, whatever, and probably go to the course a little bit early. Once I get to the course, no problem.
Okay.
It's just that waiting around is tough. So I do like coffee. Fax has been an awful influence on me. He got me into wine. I don't drink wine anymore. Then he got me into tequila, and I partake a little bit in tequila now.
But I just love the text I got. It was like so Fax. You could just see he was just stream of consciousness writing everything down. Last question, and it's about the Champions Tour. You know, a year out there, there's a lot of conversations, a lot of people talking about age and where we should go with this tour. And if we should go a little bit younger, what's the buzz on tour amongst the players? Do you feel like we're going to go maybe to a 45-year-old number? Does it feel firm at 50 right now? What are the players talking about, or have you heard anything?
I don't really have a pulse on that, but okay. I could see it going to 45. I think that would be a neat, because it seems like the guys that are like me, like McCarron, like Flesh, the guys that are 45, even Ernie Els has spoken about it, 45 to 50, they feel like they're getting beaten up too much trying to play the tour and are ready to go on to be competitive again on another tour, and 45 might be a good answer.
When you say you got beat up, like the 45 to 50, so explain to people that maybe don't know, when you're 45 and you are looking ahead at the Champions Tour, you have opportunity to play places. Like, what is the prep to get ready for 50?
It's really different for each guy. A guy like Furyk and Ernie, they still had status on the PGA Tour, so they got to play. Most guys, there's a 48 to 49 category for the Korn Ferry Tour, so 3 guys can play out of that category. Like Mike Weir played out of it for 2 years. I played out of it. Guys that are in there trying to get ready for 50 to go play the Korn Ferry, and that's a little, not a little, it's very humbling and can be demoralizing going out there to see how far everybody hits it out there and then how low the scores are, you know, and not, certainly not the biggest ego or confidence boost as you're getting ready to turn 50, but it is competitive golf. And that, for me, to play competitive golf matters.
Well, I mean, again, this goes back to I remember where we were in Florida and I was with Flesh and he was talking about the transition, you know, the mental transition that it takes, because he knew that he was like a year out from being 50. And he just knew that, you know, the clicking in and playing some events and playing some Korn Ferry and playing some PGA Tour, it was about, like you said, you almost like take the punches in the face, you know, so that you're ready for the hit when you turn 50. And you're probably, I would bet you that, you know, all of the, you know, miscuts, or you're playing with a guy that hits at 80 past you and stuff like that, all that stuff, it's some way, if you look at it the right way, can be a huge benefit, because you know you're not going to have to fight that on.
Absolutely. And then you turn 50, and then you get back on a tour that you've played with guys the last 25 years or however many years, and you've seen all these guys before and you know all these guys. So then there's that familiar or comfortable feeling that, hey, now I'm going to play competitive golf with guys that I know.
Yeah. I mean, and Phil talked about that with me. You know, Phil talked about how it has been really cool to be out with guys that he's known forever, but rarely sees now. And he's saying that he's getting a chance to talk to guys on the range and play with and interact with a lot of names that were a huge part of his life. I mean, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, you know, if you're 55 or 58 or 60, you know, you really haven't been around Phil Mickelson and what he does in golf for a decade. So, I mean, he's getting a chance to see some people that maybe he hadn't had a chance to see. And I think that's cool. I really was hoping that we'd see Mickelson this week. I just wanted to see him. I wanted to see him in a stage like this. I know every week's a big week, but I mean, this is a really, really big week for you guys. I was very excited. You know, like you said, you don't have to bomb it at Phoenix Country Club. It's really around the greens. It's putting it in the right side of the fairway, stuff like that. I always say about Phoenix, if you miss it 3 or 4 yards off line, you're screwed. If you miss it 15 yards off line, you're okay. Actually, might have worked out for Phil in that regard.
Absolutely.
But I was kind of hoping, just because I like seeing everybody, you know, feel like they've got to take it up a level. And I do get the sense that that's, if nothing else, what he's doing right now for everybody out there.
100%. And yeah, he has raised the bar, and it's just fun to be part of it now and to see that excitement come to our tour.
Quiggs, how many podcasts have you done?
I'm going to say this might be the second ever.
Nice. So golf one for the first one too?
Yes.
Wouldn't like a tequila podcast or the Brad Faxon podcast or anything. I'm just talking to Faxon. He needs to be getting a podcast out there. I appreciate the time, buddy. It's been a while. I mean, I would see you like 9 times a year and then all of a sudden, you know, you don't do it. But with Homa on the PGA Tour, I do this. I always check his scores. I have him as a favorite. And Lumi and I, when you were just starting to get going, of course you win. I mean, every Saturday or Sunday, if you were in contention, I'd get a Lumi text, be like, did you see what Quiggs did? I'm like, yeah, I saw it. I'm like watching. I'm like paying attention. It's fun to have somebody to root for. I get why people are fans of stuff. So I hope you play well this week. I hope you have fun. And I mean, the good thing is 21 right around the corner. Do you guys start in Hawaii?
Yes, we do.
God, I stayed at that resort. That place is awesome.
So the first thing I heard after I won Morocco, everybody came out to me like, you're going to love Hawaii. It is the greatest. I'm like, that's another year away, but they're already talking about it. And that's how special that place is and how much everybody looks forward to it. And certainly I am looking forward to going there with Amy.
Yeah, we did our baby moon there and I did not want to leave. And there is, there's a Dave McClay kid course across the street that is awesome. And the golf course there is awesome. And the whole resort and everything is great. So it's a good time for you. It's a good time to be Brett Quigley, isn't it?
Yes.
It's a good time to travel, even though you have to do this stupid stuff sometimes. Thanks, Quiggs. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Shane. This is fun.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back. A big thanks to Mr. Quigley for stopping by. Thank you for listening. Hope you guys enjoy the week. Make sure you watch a little bit of the PGA Tour Champions over the weekend just to see where I make bogeys a lot at Phoenix Country Club. You know, that's the course I've been a member at a couple of years. It's a fantastic golf course and an old school layout, and I think you'll really enjoy watching it on television. Hope you guys have a great weekend. Get out and play some golf if you live in a warm area and it's allowed. And if not, you got plenty to watch on television. And next week, we've got some heavy hitters for next week. I'm hearing it's the Masters next week. And when I say heavy hitters, guys, I'm talking one in particular, very heavy hitter, who hits the ball heavy, and another heavy hitter who is probably one of the more famous people in and around golf. So an exciting Masters week here at the clubhouse. Have a good weekend. We'll be back next week. The Clubhouse with Shane Bacon is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.